You're not gonna say it, somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs and are they in harmony? You're a helpful snowman.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another show. I'm in my Atomo car. I changed up automobile to Atomo car just for this intro, because I guess I thought that would be like, oh, I've never listened to this show. He said a funny thing right away. All right, I'm in. Because that's how dumb I am. Or how dumb I think you are. I don't know. But it's within the rich tradition this show has of disrespecting its audience completely. That's been my key to success. I think in February or March, we've got an anniversary coming up. And it's only been like 8 years, I think. Which I've always thought it was longer. I guess it's a sign of the times when you're like old enough to think, I've only been doing this 8 years. And it's like, only 8 years. That's a short amount of time to be doing something. So today, we're going to talk about the Narrow Your Horizons Reading Challenge. So in the past, on this show, and as part of the whole Helpful Snowman package of greatness, achieving, you know, one of the things that I really dislike about Donald Trump, or the ways that, you know, he's changed the world, I really dislike that there are certain words, you know, like great, which it's sort of like hard to use now. Let's make this great again. Or what makes this great? I wrote this column on Lit Reactor that was like, what made Roseanne great? Which I didn't really intend to be, you know, like a Donald Trump thing. I think I changed it around. Like, I think it was like the things that made Roseanne's original run great. And then maybe I changed the title around. I can't remember. Or if I tried to, and then I was like, oh, fuck it. Like, all of this doesn't work. And like, who cares? This is what people are going to assume anyway. That this is like, yeah, Donald Trump. But, anyway, you can't say that. You can't even say, oh, this trumps that anymore. That feels like a weird thing to say now, even though it's like, that's just been in the vernacular forever. But it's almost as if that's changed. It's like if the word Hitler meant something else, and then Hitler became powerful, and it's like, well, while I agree with you technically, I don't know if that works anymore. I don't fight against it by trying to, like, I'm not trying to win these terms back or anything. It's just annoying to me that it's like an individual has taken away some of our terms. Also, like, innocuous terms, useful terms, like trumping something is like a really good, that's a useful term. It's a very short word that has a meaningful use. So I'm very annoyed that that's like, you can't even say that without being like, ah, god damn it. Anyway, so in the past, we've done a reading challenge, you know, and the one we did before, I made up this kind of reading log for it, and it had a bunch of different reading challenges, but it was something that I would call experiential reading. So in other words, it's like, read something while you do this, read something while you do that. You know, read something while you're in transit. Read something out entirely outside of your house. Read the first chapter of something and then put it down, you know, and never pick it up again or stuff like that. It was more just to sort of get people thinking about reading as this different thing, I guess, as this thing of, you know, people, you would watch TV while you do something with your hands, right? Like, you might just turn on the TV to have company or to have noise. you might turn on the TV to actually watch something, you know, destination television or whatever they call it, appointment TV. So I was trying to kind of think about reading of like, what else can reading be besides some lady sitting in a window box, you know, with a bunch of fucking pillows around, reading when it's like raining outside. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's like, but what else is it? It's not just that. It's not just this version of reading. So that was kind of what prompted that, but it was also prompted a little bit because I have this vendetta, which we'll get to. Because I wrote the column, but I kind of left out the vendetta part because, you know, I guess I was trying to do a more sellable version of this whole thing, because when I'm writing something for Lit Reactor and doing a podcast, those are two different things, right? Two different goals, two different ideas, two different purposes, two different things. And, you know, I want to respect the work that I'm doing for them by doing the work for them correctly. So anyway, the Narrow Your Horizons Reading Challenge. So what I wanted to do was talk about the Narrow Your Horizons Reading Challenge on this show, because there's more to it than I presented in the column. So you can read the column at litreactor.com, but I'm going to talk about it some more. So let's start by talking about the why. Basically, what prompted me to do this is, you know, I look at reading. Okay, let's start really big. You know, New Year's resolutions, right? And I think we all kind of famously know that New Year's resolutions don't work for most of us. But how serious is that? By how much do they not work for us? You know, by what measure? So I looked into New Year's resolutions, and it turns out that 80% of New Year's resolutions fail by the second week in February. That's pretty fucking early. Like, most of us make it about 6 weeks into the year before our resolutions fail, right? And, you know, we could talk a lot about the why of that, because there's certainly some reasons why. However, the stone cold fact, you know, and this is one source that found this, but let's look at it like this. I think that the research knowledge confirms the sort of tacit knowledge, right? The sort of thing that we suspect. And it's not super far off from the degree we expect. You know, if you're a regular gym goer, you basically know this. You know that the gym is a hellhole between New Year's and about spring break. And once spring break hits that time of year, it's like people have given up on like, I'm not going to look good this summer, fuck it. Or like, this is what I'm going to be, or that kind of thing. So anyway, it's probably fair to say that most people do not succeed in their New Year's resolutions. And by most, I don't mean, 51%. I mean like, I don't know, 90% don't make it. I mean, 90% of us don't fully fulfill our resolutions, and probably a higher percent than we would think don't even get close. You know, to fail at the 6 week mark means we're not close, right? That means we're like really far away from successing. So here's the deal. I wanted to think about, like, why do we fail, and what could we do to not fail? The other thing is I looked at reading goals specifically, and I was looking at Goodreads reading challenges and doing some math. And, you know, if you look at the number of books pledged, and then, or you can look at the number of people who participated and the number of people who finished their goal, and the number was like 0.1% or something like that. I mean, it was abysmally low. Now, the average number of books pledged was way too high, right? Because it was like 60 or something. But you can't go with the average. Because something I discovered in another article, and this is someone else's work that I don't want to take credit for, but something I discovered is that people, you can't do something like an average when it comes to number of books read in a year. Because the problem is a bunch of people read a much higher number of books and it fucks up the average. So the average is much higher than the number we're looking for when we look for average. Because in other words, I think what we're trying to say when we look for the average is like, hey, if I talk to 10 people today, what's the most likely-ish number that I'm going to hear? And so in the case of something like books read, a median is probably better. And so the median is like 4. The average is like 12, I think, but the median is 4. And the average Goodreads challenge was like 60. So it's thrown off, obviously, because people on Goodreads, if you're using a reading-based social media, you're probably more interested in reading than the average person. I will grant you that. However, looking at it, you gotta look at it and say, like, boy, this is really a crazy failure rate. I mean, that is such a low success rate that it's almost difficult to understand mentally. And in addition to that, it's like, yeah, the numbers are really high. I mean, the difference between, like, 40-something and even 12 is, you know, it's like 4 times as much. 4 times as high. And also, when you look at an average goal being something like 40-something, you're like, I mean, that's a book a week. That seems like a very brisk pace for most people. Don't you think? Like, that seems like a... Well, it's a little overambitious. Let's say that. So, you know, part of the problem I see is that I think most reading challenges are really overambitious. And I think it's because we want to be challenging. But I think I talked about this before in a pretty boring show about fitness goals, right? And why those fail. But a big part of it is it's like, how many books did you read last year? And it's like, 2. Okay, well, this year I'm going to read 12, one a month. And it's like, hey, maybe if you read 2 last year, why don't you shoot for like 3 or 4 this year? That would be, if you read 4, you would read twice as many books as you read last year. You know what I mean? Let's do this in an iterative fashion. But anyway, I mean, that's some of the very basics of why. So the Narrow Your Horizons reading challenge starts with being fucking realistic, and you're going to read 5 books. That's it. That's all you need to think about for this challenge. Now, the next part of that has to do with book selection. So if you're reading 5 books and you're having trouble thinking of what to read, I want you to imagine this. Now, you don't have to do it this way. You don't actually have to follow through on this. But here's what I want you to think about when you're doing this reading challenge. If I could read 5 books this year, and those were the last 5 books I would ever read in my life, these are the last 5 reading experiences I'm ever going to have, what would you read? Maybe you would reread something. Maybe you'd read something new. Maybe you'd be like, all right, well, so-and-so, who I really like, I haven't finished all their books. Something like that, right? Which 5 would you pick? That's how you pick. I don't want to go Desert Island, because it's like, that's a different question. Desert Island, I think I need to come up with a, you know, sort of term for this question that I'm asking, because Desert Island's not quite right. Because a desert island choice is something that you're like, okay, I have, let's say, 5 albums. I'm only going to be listening to these albums for the rest of my life. I need something that's very repetitive and, or, you know, that I can be repetitive with, that I can listen to a lot. Length comes in a lot, right? Complexity, you might pick something that's more complex or something. Like, you know, if you picked Weezer's Green Album, you'd be like, well, that fucker's like 48 minutes long. That might not be my best choice. That might not be a wise decision, because it's like, all right, but I could have picked a Metallica's Garage Inc. double album, which is probably like 2 hours long. So Desert Island's a little different, right? because you're going to listen to these again and again for the rest of your life. This is more like, okay, you'll still remember all the things that you've read before. You'll still have those experiences. You'll remember these experiences. You'll still be basically literate. Like, you know, you can read a fucking sign. If someone hands you instructions to put a couch together, you can read that. It's not about, like, you then become, you lose your ability to read. You just will never read, like, a novel or a nonfiction book or whatever again. Like, never again will you sit down and read a thing. It just won't happen. It's almost like it's not that it can't happen, it's that it won't happen. Like, I can definitively tell you that it will not happen, somehow. That's how I want you to think about your five choices. And what do you want those to be? What do you think is going to be like, you know, I have five choices. It's a little bit more like, less like desert island, more like terminal island, where you've got so many years left to live. And so it's like, all right, well, you got to pack it in. Like, have you ever thought about that before? What if you knew you had, I don't know, 2 years to live? And you're like, here's the things I would do. And it's like, maybe if you're a reader, you'd be like, what are the books I would read in those 2 years, right? So you got to think about this shit. Anywho, that's what I want you to think about. Now, I also want you to be thinking about these books in terms of quitting books. Because I'm of the opinion that if you're living life the right way, you're probably quitting a lot of books. Because there is no fucking reason to finish reading a book that sucks. Or that's not even great. Like, you should only finish a book if it's fucking great. And it's, like, really pushing you. You want to read it. And by want to read it, I mean, like, you look forward to your lunch break at work because you're like, I'm going to sit in the break room and read this fucking book while I eat. Or you're like, you get home and you want to read a couple pages. Or, like, you're reading it while you take a crap, because you're like, I might only get in half a page, but that's okay because I'm enjoying it that much. That's what I mean by enjoying it and, like, really loving it. That's kind of the standard. It's a very high standard, and that's on purpose. That's supposed to be that way. And that's the standard I want you to use in your books. And that's part of why it's got that number of five. Because five is not a high number, but that discourages you from finishing something just so you can add that number to your tally, right? I don't want you tallying up books that you're like, eh, you know, or I don't want you pushing through, plowing through something that sucks because you're like, well, I'm trying to do this reading challenge. So, you know, I'm gonna try and do this. This is partially about getting you to think about reading in a different way. And the way I'm trying to get you to think about it differently is to say, you know, maybe reading is not about plowing through stuff. Maybe reading is not about, like, racking up these numbers. You know what I mean? It's a little bit like, you know, when I stopped running after high school. Like, I ran my last high school track meet, and I was proud of what I did. And then afterwards, you're kind of in this, like, well, now what state, right? So I, like, ran a marathon. I ran a 5K time that I was really proud of. And this all happened within a few years after graduating high school. And once I ran that 5K time and ran that marathon that I was like, you know, all right, that satisfied me. I was kind of like, well, now what? And I kind of started switching to being like, well, let's go on runs that you enjoy. Like, what are things that you enjoy about running? What do you want to do? As opposed to, like, training as a means to an end. It was more like, well, I'm going to enjoy the running part of running and not worry so much about the, like, well, how is this going to affect my performance in the context of goal XYZ? So that's kind of what I did, right? And that's kind of what I'm trying to get everyone to do with reading right now, is to say, like, read for the sake of reading the thing. Like, don't read because you want to be somebody else or have these other feelings or, like, have this knowledge or for self-improvement. Just read because you want to do the reading. And I think that will help people read more. I think you'll read a lot more if you're reading for the sake of reading. If reading is its own reward, as, you know, if I can put it in the most boring way possible, there you go. Which brings me to another point. Now, this was harder to express in the article because I had to be careful because I don't want people to misinterpret me. I need to be understood. A lot of people read for self-improvement, you know, and they're going to read something that maybe they don't particularly want to read, but because they feel like it challenges them or it's going to make them this better person. You know, like maybe I line up my 12 books to read for the year and I'm like, okay, I'm going to read this treatise on feminism and this one about race and this one about how to improve myself through mindfulness and this one about this, you know, and overall it's a list of books that you're like, well, I mean, this is great, but the thing that I see is we don't treat other things this way. Most people don't line up a list of all the movies they're going to watch this year. And then you look through that list and you're like, well, I mean, yes, at the end of the year, this will have been an enriching year for you in terms of film. And I don't mean to say just enriching in terms of like, oh, race and gender and culture and whatever. I mean other things too, like, okay, this year I'm going to read Moby Dick and I'm going to read Ulysses and do, you know, David Foster Wallace and all these things that are like aspirational. Like, do you want to read Ulysses or do you want to be the person who has read Ulysses? Is that how you want to start 2020? Right? You're like, when I get into 2020, I'll be a guy who's read Ulysses. And I kind of want to get away from that. Because, like, again, okay, film. This would be the equivalent of, like, someone laying out all the movies they're going to watch this year. And they're like, all right, I'm going to watch Citizen Kane. I'm going to watch Casablanca. I'm going to watch, you know, whatever that train robbery movie is. You know, I'm going to watch The Jazz Singer. I'm going to watch this. I'm going to watch that. And you're like, okay, but, I mean, do you not have any place in your life for something that's sort of shitty but sort of fun? You know, you're like, oh, well, because here's what happens. You make a list like that. And then you see a preview for, like, you know, Spider-Man Far From Home, and you're like, I think I would have fun watching that. But it's like, no. Watching films is about self-improvement, not fun. And see, nobody says this about movies. And everyone would agree, like, there's room for both. If you want to do that, if you want to watch just a bunch of hardcore documentaries about, you know, the sugar that's in food or something, you could totally do that. But you've probably still got the time and the wherewithal to watch something that you're like, it was just kind of for fun. I just wanted to watch something that was a little mindless, a little fun, and I like that experience too. And what I'm trying to do is say, like, by cutting that out of reading, by cutting the self-improvement aspirational part out of reading, for the length of 5 books, I want people to try it and see how their reading habits change or see how if they feel differently. Like, are they like, you know, once I took this off reading, I started feeling differently about it. This also, goes into, you know, a point I was making in the article, which I don't care about as much, but I was trying to make it in order to stave off the swarm of negative comments, which is like, hey, if you're worried about expanding your horizons, if you're like, well, I don't want to just narrow my horizons in 2019, that's totally cool, but think about doing it in a way besides reading. Because you know what? And I do believe this. Maybe the voices that you should be listening to or that have something interesting to say to you aren't working in print. Maybe they're in films. Maybe they're in podcasts. Wink. Maybe they're like writing articles online. Maybe it's, you know, following people on Twitter who you never followed before. Maybe it's like reading a lot of book reviews by a particular book reviewer. Maybe it's something, maybe it's a YouTube channel, you know, God forbid it be something as trashy and garbage entertainment as a YouTube channel. But, you know, maybe that's what it is this year. Maybe you try that this year. And maybe that's a good thing, too, is, like, not only am I reading differently, but I'm exploring the expansion of my horizons in different ways. I think that would be a great thing. Like, you've got these tools in the toolbox and you're like, okay, but whenever I go to expand my horizons, I reach for the hammer. You know, I reach for the book. That's my only tool that I use for this. That's the only thing I think of this. But then that puts so much onus on reading and books that you're like, well, I can't really afford to, you know, I'm going to spend so much time reading this year. I don't want to spend any of it reading something that's not improving me as a person. Look, you're not Tim fucking Ferriss. You're not like trying to get the 4-hour work week, are you? Because if you are, then I guess go for it. But otherwise, it's like, eh, fuck it. Try it for fun. Read for the sake of reading. Another thing that I think is good about this program, and let's talk a little bit about, I'm going to start getting into the rivalry. So Book Riot Read Harder Challenge is what inspired my original reading challenge. And I've talked about this many times, but I do have a new example because I did the Read Harder Challenge 1 year, and they have a lot of things like read a memoir by someone who identifies as trans, right? And it's like, okay, that was cool. And so I'm doing that. And what I found, though, in reading, doing that challenge is I read this book by someone who I was like, maybe they're trans, maybe they're not. And I spent a lot of time trying to find out online whether or not they're trans. And ultimately, I was kind of like, well, it's really none of my fucking business whether or not they're trans. Is it? I mean, if they're trans and they don't really want to talk about that, or they're like, this is not really any of some asshole who lives in Colorado's business, I tend to agree with that. And I'm like, I don't know, I really enjoyed the book. It was fun. And then it kind of killed some of the joy for me because I was like, oh, shit, this doesn't fit this category. And it's like I'm trying to make this person trans to check off this thing on a list, which I'm like, this feels wrong. I don't think this is a good thing to do. So anyway, and this year, too, I've thought more about how, like, okay, someone who identifies as trans, but I don't understand fully. I think there are some people who are trans who identify as trans, but I think there are also a lot of people who would have identified as trans at one time or are like, I identify as male. I was assigned female at birth, but I identify as male. And I have transitioned in whatever form. And no, I don't identify as trans. I identify as a guy. I'm a guy. I'm not a trans woman. I'm a guy. Or a trans man, or I don't know. Trans am. What was the trans am before it was the trans am? Just the am? What are you before you're an am? A not? It was a not, and then it transitioned to being an am? This is a terrible, like, stand-up bit that I'm just coming up with, that I'm sure someone else has thought of. But what a stupid fucking bit. Okay, anyway. Point being, I think that there's a part of me that just really strongly dislikes this idea of looking into people this way. Oh, I remember the other example I had was a lot of people. So a lot of people in the literary circles, when they're doing this sort of thing, and it's like, you know, read something by someone from this country or someone who identifies in this way and that kind of thing. Chumpa Lahiri is like a darling of that kind of stuff, right? Like, so many people are like, I read The Namesake, or what's the other one? Interpreter of Maladies, is that the other big one? So many people use her books for these challenges, right? Which is good. She's a good writer. However, I was reading in an interview with her that she identifies as American. So, like, to say that she... And she didn't say she's like, I'm American slash something. I'm this American or whatever. She's like, I identify as American. I feel American. I feel like my life growing up, I felt American. And so it's weird because you get into this weird thing where you're like, okay, well, wait a minute. I see her as this, but she sees herself as this. And like, we're in the world now where what people see themselves as, part of respecting them is saying like, okay, cool. Well, that's how I will think of you, or, you know, I will try to think of you, maybe. So is it fair to read her as something other than American when she's like, I see myself as American? And so you get into this complicated situation where you have to find out what somebody is and also how they identify. And I think part of what I don't like about this is it sort of narrows, it looks like this broadening of options, but it really narrows the options. Because what you're going to end up reading a lot is a lot of things like memoirs of somebody who's talking about their experience as such and such. Now, these can be really entertaining and rewarding and helpful and so on. But I kind of like, I don't know, I'm just sort of like, can't I just read a horror novel that's by a trans person, but it's not necessarily about them being a trans person? You know what I mean? But how do I count that? And then also, I guess sometimes I'd just like to be surprised. Like, I kind of want to exist in almost this world where you pick up a book and you read it and it's really good. And then you're like, huh, turns out that person was blank. That's the thing. So I guess I feel like in an attempt to expand horizons, that in a way narrows horizons because it kind of almost makes it like, I mean, it's not totally this way. This is an unfriendly way of looking at it, but it does make it feel to me a little bit like, hey, if you're a gay person, you know, I'm happy to read your book, but it kind of better be about you being gay. Right? So anyway, a little bit about what I didn't like about these lists of challenges was that I felt that they were sort of reductive of the people who were making it. In other words, it's not like read a book that makes you feel this way or read a book that challenges you in this way. It's like read a book by this kind of person. And then it sort of hedges you in and boxes you in a little bit in terms of what that kind of book is actually going to be. All right, but let's go a little further, because there was something that I also felt was a little gross about the Read Harder Challenge, and now I can get into it because there's a little bit more that goes in my favor. All right. The Read Harder Challenge, I've always felt a little bit questionable about in terms of, is this what they really believe over at Book Riot, or is this what they're doing because this drives traffic to them and this is how they sell books through an affiliate program? And this, you know, basically my question is this challenge, are the people behind it like, this will really expand people's horizons and that's a good thing and society will be wonderful? Or is this like a marketing campaign that we've been tricked by? And this year I feel especially that it's a marketing campaign for a couple reasons. Primarily because they sell like a Read Harder Challenge journal. And it's like a reading journal that's specifically for this year, specifically for their reading challenge. And that makes me feel a little bit like, wait a second, because it's not like there's a ton of content in there, right? It's mostly something you fill out, and it's their categories, and then you write stuff about the books you read and so on, right? But so they're selling something off the back of a diversity push, which I feel like is getting into the sort of appropriative territory, right? Because if you're selling a product based on this, I don't know how I feel about that. I'll give you a good example. I was made aware of there's like a Gillette razor commercial that's like addressing toxic masculinity. And if you watch it, it's like fucking hilarious because, you know, it's so manipulative, right? And it's, all right. We did an HR training at my work, which was like asked questions like, you know, do you think it'd be appropriate to ask another employee to get coins out of your front pocket for you? And it's like, no. Obviously, I don't think that would be appropriate. But that's also like an unrealistic situation. And also, something that's so obviously a bad idea, I don't really need guidance on that. You know, you're not helping me a ton when you're like, okay, and this is, you know, would it be okay to just take your fucking pants off in your office, stand on your desk and start jerking off, and it, someone walks in and then you blame them for walking in? And it's like, well, no. You can stop that at like, is jerking off at work a great idea? Probably not. Probably don't do that. But you know, you gotta get more complicated. You gotta talk about the real scenario. Hey, the boss is changing into his workout clothes in his office before going to the gym after work. He forgot to lock the door and someone came in and saw him partially naked. Where do you go from there? Do you bring it up to somebody? Should both parties talk about it? Should they talk about it with somebody else in the room so that they can just say, the boss can say like, I'm so sorry, I forgot to lock the door, I was changing into my gym clothes. The other person can say, you know, I will knock first in the future. I wish I hadn't seen that, but it's whatever. And then we can kind of move on. Because these are the things that actually happen. And like asking us if we should get coins out of each other's pockets doesn't solve any of the problems we're having, right? It's asinine. And like this Gillette commercial is kind of the same. Because like the implication is basically like, hey, men can do better. And men should do better about like calling out other guys and so on. And the examples it shows is like, all right, there's a kid who's probably like 10 years old who's being chased by a bunch of other 10-year-olds who I guess are going to beat the shit out of him, is what's implied. And like, it looks like a fucking Benny Hill sketch. He's being chased by this pack of boys who are like, kill the pig, spill its blood, eat its guts, you know, and like, they're being chased down like the streets of New York City. And it's like this whole pack of kids chasing this one other kid for no apparent reason and so on. And it's sort of like, I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I don't think a kid should be being chased by a pack of other kids and maybe getting the shit kicked out of him. You're not going to get from Pete a thing like, no, let it happen. It's fine. My point is like, yeah, I mean, you're trying to make this statement about this thing, but to be honest, I think that you're making a very easy statement here, which is like, we shouldn't let whole gangs of kids who are apparently roaming the street like it's the fucking Warriors beat the shit out of some other random kid. Like, hey, as an adult, you should probably step in if you see that. Duh. No fucking duh. And then you've got, you know, I'm trying to remember what else was in the commercial. Oh, there's a sequence where, you know, pretty lady is walking down the street and there's these two guys standing there. And like one guy checks out this lady and just immediately starts following her. Like he can't help it. Like he's the wolf in the old cartoons, you know, where it's just like he's just magnetically attracted to her and he can't stop himself. And his friend is like, bro, no, not cool. Which I was like, no fucking shit. No shit, Gillette. Like, if I have never been in a scenario where I was like standing next to a dude and we saw a pretty girl walking down the street and he just basically, like a hobo following a pie smell trail on a window, is just like wafting his way towards her. That I have never, ever been in anything like that remotely. So again, it's like, yeah, let's demonstrate how guys can be good guys. And it's like, well, yeah. I mean, if my friend was like, hey, I think I'm going to go rape this chick in an alley real quick, I'd be like, dude, no. What? No. Don't even do that. There are so many reasons to not do that. Do we even have to talk about why not? You know, are you going to ask when I say, like, don't do that, are you going to say why? Or are you going to be like, oh, yeah, I don't know what happened. I just went into a fugue state. I think we should call some hospitals and see if I have a fucking brain tumor because I just did the craziest thing I've ever done in my entire life and then briefly was even flashing anger at you for stopping me from doing something that would be the biggest mistake I've ever made. What the fuck? I mean, it's so ridiculous. And then there's one, too, where it's like two, probably 4 or 5-year-old boys, and they're kind of like wrestling around. And it's like, I guess, getting out of hand. And there's a dad grilling, and he's just like, boys will be boys. And there's a whole row of dads grilling, and they're all like, boys will be boys, boys will be boys. And then, you know, and then the commercial turns, right? And it's like, hey, the one dad stops these other boys from, like, chasing this one boy, right? And he's like, hey, that's not okay, you know, and, like, whatever. And, like, comes to the other boy's defense. And then there's the two boys wrestling, and a dad comes, and he's like, hey, guys, come on. You know, knock it off. And you're like, yeah, I mean, I think that's what would happen. I don't think that that's... I don't think, you know, the two boys wrestling too, it's like, it looks like a fucking post-apocalyptic MMA bout where they're like, yes, we'll fight the children, put them in the ring together. We've run out of, sir, we've run out of adult men. Fine, put in the children. Are you sure you, yes, the children will fight. It will be glorious. We'll be the only ones with children fighting. Come on. Give me a fucking break. But anyway... The commercial, I find the commercial ridiculous and also super manipulative, because here's the thing. The commercial sort of purports to be speaking to men and like saying like, men, we can be better. We're better than this. We do better than this and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, this commercial is for women. I'm sorry, but it is. Like this commercial is, you know, everyone's talking about it as the Gillette toxic masculinity commercial. And, like, toxic masculinity is so hilarious to me because it's, like, it's just something that I see said about male behavior, just bad male behavior. It doesn't have to be male-centric behavior. It's just when a man does something bad, it's like, well, toxic masculinity. That's why. That's what it is, and that's why it happened. It's both the cause and effect. Is toxic masculinity. And I just don't fully understand. No one, I don't think anyone could really define, like, this is what toxic masculinity is, right? Anyway. I think this commercial's for women, and here's why. I think that if you go to the grocery store, I have been to the grocery store or a Target many times in the middle of the day. Because I need to buy, like, snacks for a work thing or, like, supplies for a work thing. And if you go to the grocery store in the middle of the day, lots of ladies there. Like, if you're looking to pick up a single... Well, it's probably not a single lady. I always think the grocery store is where you see a lot of ladies at the grocery store. It is always ladies' night at the grocery store. Now, this is not, like, a slam on ladies, and in fact, I'm kind of like, eh, it seems like you guys do most of the fucking shopping, which is one of my most dreaded activities, is grocery shopping, or, like, home goods Target-type shopping. Point being, though, I'm guessing that most of the razors are purchased by women. Even the ones that are purchased for men are probably more often purchased by women. And I will bet you... that the Gillette company is well aware of this fact. I don't think I'm saying something that Gillette would be like, huh, we've never thought of that. I think they know that. And I think that this commercial, to me, is at best, it's a, like, half-assed attempt to change the world. At worst is a, like, super cynical method of getting sales. And it most likely is somewhere in between. I mean, I think it's very convenient that right now, like, the way to sort of boost your signal. Think about this, because, like, all kinds of fucking news programs are talking about this commercial now. So basically, you make a commercial, but you make this controversial commercial, which it's not even controversial. It's just like, eh, who cares? I mean, do I really care if someone who made a commercial at Gillette thinks that men have fucked up or, like, can do better or whatever? No! I don't care. Like, I don't care. Who thought of that? Who's proposing that idea? Gillette, the makers of razors. What the fuck do they know about anything? And what the fuck do they know about, like, what is and isn't masculine and toxic masculinity and stuff? And it's like, hey, Gillette, how about you make a fucking razor that just looks like a razor and doesn't look like some kind of goddamn space shuttle? How about this? How about you allow me to not be a toxic masculinity type person by, you know, creating an affordable razor so that maybe we all have to work a little less and there's less pressure to like bring home the bacon and that kind of thing. How about it doesn't cost, like, if you shave daily, it doesn't cost you like $80 a month. How about that? How about, like, in when you have your commercials, you don't have these, like, super handsome dudes, right? How about all of these things? I mean, give me a fucking break. And, you know, Gillette's the company that's, like, the best a man can get. That's their thing, right? And I'm kind of like, okay. Well, I guess they've changed their mind. I don't know. Anyway, here's my point. I think I'm very cynical about advertising that I think is jumping on a movement that has important things to say in order to sell a product. And that is, to me, the definition of co-opting or appropriating something. Because if you're like, hey, we're going to sell more razors by talking about the topic of toxic masculinity, so let's do it, that's fucked up. That's not cool. Like, that's not okay. That's not like, no, that is not why we want to talk about these topics. And I'm very opposed to the idea of like a company taking something that's important and a discussion that should be something that should be discussed and should be a lot more nuanced and has a lot of interesting angles to it and using it to be like, you know, we could sell some, we could move some fucking units here if we do this. No, fuck off. All right? Fuck off. I feel like that's what Book Riot is doing to a different extent and with books. But when you start selling your journal of like, hey, keep track of your challenge that's challenging you to expand your horizons and learn about LGBTQ plus and people of color and authors of color and woman authors of color and all this stuff, and you're like, and then we reap the reward for it, that's a little questionable. that doesn't sit right with me. Like, that doesn't feel good to me. That doesn't feel like something that someone should be doing. Now, again, this is the most cynical way I could look at this. I'm going to admit that right up front. But it's kind of how I've felt about this since the beginning, because I've always sort of felt that, you know, what they're doing is like, hey, let's create this thing that drives a lot of traffic to our website and therefore gives us money. But now I feel like I feel different. I feel more that way. And I feel like now there's a little piece of evidence of like, yeah, because someone could just print off the free PDF and do it that way. Or they could buy this fancy journal and, you know, then they can really, really engage in the diversity of literature. And it's like, oh, fuck off. Don't sell me that. Don't sell me something that does that. That's wrong. It's wrong to sell something that way. So I'm calling it out. I'm calling it out. Book Riot. Pete's got your number. And so he's going against that. And I think the other thing that I find sort of interesting is like, okay, you can make a, you know, look at the Narrow Your Horizons reading challenge. I'm telling people to read what they want to read, not to read other stuff. But I think what people assume is that if you tell people, like, read something you want to read, find something you want to read, look into yourself and figure out what you really want to read, that they're like, Mein Kampf, definitely. I'm going to read Mein Kampf. Rush Limbaugh's probably written a book, right? And Bill O'Reilly. That's what I'm going to read. And, you know, another thing about, I think, reading challenges, but this one in particular, I really don't think that people who read a lot will end up reading a lot more diversely, because it's like you run out of fucking people. Even if you're like, I kind of end up liking this. I just don't understand. Like, I don't think, and I could be wrong, but I don't think that most people are like, you know what I want to read? Short stories written by white dudes who went to the Iowa Writers' Workshop. I mean, that is something I am interested in, but it's not something I'm interested in at the expense of other things. It's, you know, and like, when I was getting into books, I sort of accidentally got into books that were like, my top five authors for a long time were gay men. And like, I had no plan of, oh, I'm gonna read these books by gay men. And I'm gonna talk about that, and I'm gonna think of, and I'm really expanding my horizons. And it was just like, no, I don't know, whatever it was, there just were a lot of gay men working in the kind of literature that I wanted to read. And so that happened. That's a thing that happened. My God. It's snowing. It's not horrible. It just started snowing. And like, this person in front of me just did like a total brake check, and I nearly lost my mind. Because it's just like, you don't just fucking hit the brakes for no reason, please. Because I have no reason to expect you to hit the brakes. Anyway, I just think that, like, here's the sort of subtext of what I'm saying, and like the subconscious level. I really think if you just get people interested in reading, they will naturally expand into other areas. You know, I think if you get someone interested in a subject, if you get someone interested in film, if you get someone interested in visual arts, if you get somebody interested in cars, if you get someone interested in whatever, you know, they will start out at some level and they'll probably be in their comfort zone and so on. But if you keep it going, if you keep things going correctly and you just keep their interest going, they will probably be interested in even more stuff. Oh my God, this motherfucker's doing it too. Everyone is just like, let's hit the brakes. We're coming to an intersection with a green light and there's no cars. This is craziness. There's something about when weather starts. I am not a crazy driver. I am not like a tailgating 20 miles over the speed limit driver. All right. But like when the weather starts, everyone kind of goes to the polls. They're like, I'm going to be the most cautious. We're going 20 miles below the limit right now. I mean, that is very slow. It's like people are, they're coming up to a green light and it's like, well, this just turned green, but I'm going to start slowing down now. Anyway, I think the thing is, you got to get people interested in reading and then you expand from there. But you can't, I don't think it works to start first with the expansion. I don't think expansion first is the answer. I think it's like you get someone interested in woodworking because it's like, how do people come to something like woodworking? I think a lot of people come to it by something like, you know, I want to make a desk for myself. You know, I want to make this for myself. How come I can't find something that I like that, you know, suits my needs? How come I'm tired of having this cheap particle board bullshit in my house? It looks like crap. You can't repaint it. It sucks. I want to have something nice. This is why I can't have nice things. And I think that causes a lot of people to get into it. And, you know, what causes people to get into, like, video games? And a lot of people, let's say, start playing video games by playing a very basic game. Something that they just enjoy. They're not trying to, like, oh, most people's first video game probably is not like a Bethesda choose your own lifestyle type of game. I'm sure that is for some people, and I'm sure a lot of people get into those and then are like, yeah, this is what I'm talking about. But I know a lot of people start by saying, like, you know, I like games in general. And you play a few and you're like, these don't really satisfy my need. I'm going to explore further and find something that does. So I think there's this false idea that, like, hey, if you're going to do reading, you got to do it this way. You got to expand horizons. If you don't like reading, it's because you haven't expanded your horizons enough yet. And I totally disagree with that. I think there are a lot of legitimate reasons to not enjoy reading. I'm going to be honest and say there are lots of reasons that people don't like to read. And they're not wrong. I mean, there are a lot of things about reading and about the world of books that are boring. There are a lot of fucking boring books out there. It's like we talked about on an earlier show, that Sturgeon's Law of like 90% of everything is crap. That includes books. And that includes books that people love. It totally does. But anyway, that's kind of my rant slash promotion of the Narrow Your Horizons Reading Challenge. I'm going to put up a log so you can find it at helpfulsnowman.com. Hopefully, like, right around when this episode airs. And it's just a simple thing for you to print out. And there is one other element to the reading challenge, which is, like, the only outside of reading challenge challenge. Oh, this is part of it, too, is that I think a lot of these other challenges are very fun and interesting up front. Like, when you're putting together your list of books and you're like, oh, I'm going to organize it this way and do this, right? That stuff's all fun and interesting and new and different. And then when you're actually doing the reading, you're like, eh, boring. Honk shoe. This reading challenge is almost entirely about reading, because that's what I think a reading challenge should be. It's kind of like, you know, again, like working out. It's like, yeah, the fun part of working out is when you're like planning it out and like, let me get my new shoes and do all this. But then you go to do it and you're like, okay, I'm doing my third set of bench press and I'm tired and I just want to go home and like watch Netflix. That's when it sucks. Doing the actual thing fucking sucks. And that's the grind. But that's the thing. This is all grind. No, nothing else. So it doesn't trick you, though. It doesn't trick you into doing something and then kind of throw you off the cliff. Because I think you get thrown off the cliff with a lot of other ones. Because you're like, well, it's all up front. It's all fun. It's all new. It's all this. It's all that. And then you're like, oh, well, now that I'm actually doing the thing, I realize I don't like it. But there is one other part. And the one other part of the reading challenge is when you get the logs, you'll notice there's like 4 to a page. And part of what you're supposed to do with this reading challenge is have your log, and I want you to give the others to other people. You know what I mean? And actually give the physical thing to someone else and say, hey, I'm doing this reading challenge. It's very simple. I read 5 books. Now, they got to be books you really, really like. And I can go into, listen to this hour-long podcast if you want more explanation. But I can outline the basic rules for you. Read 5 books you really like. If you're not really liking it, then you have to put it down. It doesn't count for this fucking challenge. How do you know what to read? Do you want to read it? Find out. Figure it out. How do you figure out books you like? I don't know. You better fucking figure it out. Ask them the not desert island, desert island question. Right? That's it. That's all there is to it. But I want people to, like, give these to other people, because I think another big part of this is, like, people talking to other people about books and reading and being like, hey, I'm reading this year. But also, I think that people saying, like, I'm challenging myself to read 5 books this year is a healthy, good thing. Because, you know, people don't want to lose 5 pounds this year. They want to lose 25 pounds. And so they're, like, challenging themselves. But I think people are embarrassed to say, like, I want to lose 5 pounds this year and keep it off. Because it's like, well, because then, A, if I fuck up, I feel like a real fuck up. Because I couldn't do something easy. But B, it's because, like, people aren't going to be impressed by that goal. People aren't going to be, you know, people be like, oh, that's easy. You could do that in a month. And it's like, that might be true, but so what? Maybe you succeed. Maybe you should succeed for once in your goddamn goals. But I want to initiate more conversations about reading and people talking about it and people being like, oh yeah, I'm reading a book. You know, it's like, God forbid you be able to meet people and say like, so what have you read lately? And they have actual answers for you. I was hanging out with my sister and she was like, what are you reading right now? And, you know, and she told me what she was reading. And I was like, oh, this is nice, because you can just talk to someone about a book. You can just be like, hey, books are a thing that exist. And like, here's what I think of them. And here's the way I'm engaging with them right now. It's amazing. Anywho. That's my rant. That's my rant. That's my challenge. I encourage you to take on this challenge. One mistake, don't make this mistake of, hey, if you take on this challenge, you can only read 5 books this year. Like, if you're like, I'm going to read way more than that this year, cool. Start with this, and then you finish this challenge, and then if you want to jump off that into something else, great. Good for you. I'm proud of you. You know, I'll say what your father never said. I am proud of you, son, daughter, whatever they called you. I'm proud of you, pumpkin. Is that a unisex? I knew a dad who called his adult son honey, so I feel like pumpkin is not too far off. It's less weird than honey, even though it's like, I mean, they're both just foods. Not even really foods, I guess. One's like a gourd, and the other one is like a bee byproduct. Ugh. Anyway, that's the program. So I hope you'll do it. I hope you'll consider it. And even if you don't do it, thanks for listening. Because this has been like an hour of you listening to someone talk about books and talk about their opinion about books and like how we can move forward as a reading culture. How do we become, you know, how do we get better? And I do think we get better. Maybe that's like the last thing I'll say about it is I read this book by a doctor named Atul Gawande, and it was called Better. And what he was talking about made a lot of sense to me, which was he was talking about the idea of small iterative improvement being really important, and that we often lose our sense of that because we're trying to change something completely 100%, and we're not taking the easy opportunities to make small change, and the small change can make a big difference. An example I'd give you is he was talking about hand washing in hospitals and how like the simple fact of hand washing can prevent the spread of disease and prevent the spread of bacteria with like so much. The percentage of, you know, improvement is crazy just from a very simple hand washing thing. But it's tough because it takes consistency. And it's like, yeah, you have to, everyone has to do it every time. It can't be like one person's really good at it. It can't be like, well, I do it more than I did. It's got to be like everyone does it all the time. But, you know, he was talking about how like hospitals want to install these complicated filtration systems and these other things and do all this stuff. And he's like, listen, if we just could do hand washing, and he's like, and how do you make it easy for people? There should be like a million sinks. Every room should have a sink in it. And when a doctor comes in, it should be part of their normal routine to go straight to the sink and wash their hands. You know what I mean? Everything should be there. The Purell gel should be there. You know what I mean? That should be everywhere. It should be almost difficult to not use that stuff. And I really agreed with him. Like, I think that's really smart. And I think it's realistic because I think he's looking at the world as it is, not as we want it to be, but as it is. And the world as it is not perfect. And it's hard to get people to do things consistently all the time. And it's especially hard when we don't see an immediate, tangible result. You know, a hospital initiates a hand washing program and it's like, yeah, less people are getting sick, but we don't really see that. You know what I mean? It's like you'd have to do it for like a year and then you're like, wow, these numbers are completely different than they once were. This is amazing. I'm so happy with the result. But it's not like you as a doctor are like, my life is totally changed. But ultimately, you're doing something really, really good for everyone that you work for all of your patients. And that's kind of how I feel about this. You know, I'm like, let's talk about a reading program that makes us better, not one that makes us perfect. Let's not do the one where we're like, if I did this, I would be like, I am the fucking greatest version of myself I've ever been. I've never read like this in my life. And now I'm awesome. Let's do the one that's like, hey, you know what? I wonder how many times the printing ticket please wait lady has been on this podcast. She's basically my guest host from last year. If you weren't listening to this show last year, I took a trip every week for 3 months. Not a trip. I was in a class, and I was going to class every week for 3 months. So I was driving to and from the airport every week. Anyway, so printing ticket, please wait, lady, is my co-host. We need a name for her. Roberta the Robota, something like that. Anyway, let's get better. That's what I'm trying to say. Let's get better. I don't think you're going to be perfect. Sorry, fuckers. I don't think you're going to be perfect next year. I don't think you're going to be perfect in 10 years. But I do think if you do this, you will be better. Not better, not healed, not perfect. Better. That's what we're shooting for. That's kind of what, you know, I'm a realist. What can I say? What the fuck can I say? All right. That's all. That's all for me. That's all for you. I'm going to get out of the car, get out of my dreams, get into my car, get on a plane, etc. Thanks for listening. Thanks for those of you who donate. There's a Patreon page. Go to helpfulsnowman.com. You'll see there's a page linked to Patreon. You can go there. You can give me money. Bye.
You're not going to say it. Somebody should. Let's talk about two time. Let's talk about bum one, yeah. Asking the questions that nobody could. Like, where are the bone thugs in? Are they in harmony? Dee-dee, dee-doo-doo. You're a helpful snowman.